Welcome to Saturday Simulcast, our February 3rd edition. I want to thank the Union Club Hotel, Boiler Up Bar, 811 Bistro, Leaps Coffee, the good folks at the Union Club Hotel, including Vicky Wicks. We appreciate all they do for us. And remember, you can support the Union Club Hotel as they want to increase and improve their designation as one of the top Marriott properties, and it is one of those without question. So we thank them. Today's show, good one, as always. Tom Deanhart will join us. We'll talk a little Purdue football recruiting. And you can't help but talk about it. Tom and I sat next to each other for the Purdue Northwestern game on Wednesday night. We're still buzzing over that. Also, we will have Rob Blackman, the voice of Purdue men's basketball. He will be talking about tomorrow's big game against Wisconsin, 1 o'clock Sunday against the Badgers, a huge game for both teams as Purdue makes its quest for its 26th Big Ten title. That will be a lot of fun as well. And then, of course, Bruce Weber, analyst on the BTN, former Purdue assistant coach for 18 years, coached at Kansas State, coached at Illinois. You guys all know that. 497 wins, very impressive in that. We'll look forward to getting Bruce's insight. Both Rob will have a great bird's eye view of Chris Collins' meltdown and talk about that. Bruce Weber obviously was in the studio on Wednesday night, but he'll talk about that. And also he can relate to what the Boilermakers will be going through on Sunday when they take on Wisconsin. So we'll look forward to a great show. Thanks so much for joining us and stay tuned. Tom Deanhart will join us next. I got to start with that because you and I shared that when we were sitting right next to each other. About as crazy, one of the craziest games I've seen. You've been going there a long time. I've been going there a long time. I think you were 2 years old when the building was built. I was there when it opened the first time. But just an amazing basketball game. And Northwestern brought everything to the table. What did Dave Revson say, Tom, on Wednesday night? No team in 763 games has scored 95 points, shot 55% from the field, 20 assists, and less than 10 turnovers. Northwestern, the first team to lose in that scenario. What's that say about Purdue, maybe? I mean, is it it was an unreal situation.
Yeah, I always think to myself, having watched sports for years, you know, Alan, good teams always find a way to win games like that. Yeah. It's funny. It's the funniest thing, isn't it, Alan? And that's a sign of a good team. When you can find a way to win a game you shouldn't win. And Purdue had a lot of reasons not to have the deserve to win that game last night. But you know what, Alan? They did. And how many times have I ever left Mackey muttering to myself, gosh darn it, Purdue was the better team, but they didn't find a way to win it maybe at some point or another. But I think it speaks volumes for Purdue. And I think I was at the post game last night, and I can't remember if it was Braden Smith. They were asked sort of that type of a question, you know, about finding a way to win. And he talked about how the players have each other's back. And they got that punch in the nose, Alan. And you know what? They didn't flinch. Things weren't going their way, Alan. And you know what? They kept on plodding forward. And they found a way to win. There was no divisiveness from the way the players were talking last night. So that says a lot. And you know, Alan, the best teams are led by the players, not the coaches. Yeah. They always say if the coach has got to lead you, you're going to have a tough time winning the games. So obviously that speaks volumes about the leadership, I think, of this team. You know, Ethan Morton's, I know, a key leader for that squad. And it wasn't pretty, Alan, but like I said, they found a way to win. That free throw discrepancy, too, 46 for Purdue attempts, and then Northwestern had 8. And Chris Collins in the postgame, I'm sure everybody's seen it a million times now, of course, highlighted that. And I think that was the point of his postgame rant. On the field, actually, on the court antics, I say.
Yeah.
And I can't remember many free throw discrepancies of that ilk, but yeah, it was just a barn burner. Now, and I'll be honest with you, if I was watching at home, I probably would have turned it off. I couldn't bear to watch, but I was forced to sit there right here for me. And now I got one of the better memories of my life for as far as Purdue basketball goes.
5 points down with 2 minutes and 40 seconds to go, and Northwestern doing what they were doing. Dead in the water was the thing I think I muttered to you when sitting next to you that was that. Chris Collins, right. I've not seen many box scores like that. I think Chris Collins is very well respected in general. Matt Painter went out of his way to talk about what a great job he has done with Northwestern, and he has. I mean, for a team that's not ranked, this is a good basketball team. If Purdue gets a third shot at them, or Northwestern gets a third shot at Purdue in the Big Ten tournament, I don't know if you're Purdue if you want that. But talk about Chris Collins and being able to hold together. But I've been in that building a long time, not seen a tirade quite like that. But then he goes down and shakes Painter's hand and hugs Zach Edey. I thought that was really actually and he was enraged. But he held it together to do that. I thought that was kind of cool.
If you go to Knucklehead Central, it's fun to get the perspectives on the Collins post game on court antics. Some people, could sympathize with him, and other people thought it was still Bush League. But Alan Karpik, it was entertaining.
Oh, it was
And, you know,
entertaining.
I
Holy
couldn't figure
cow.
out, I was trying to figure out what he initially was mad about. I didn't know until I came home and watched somebody had put on Twitter. I thought maybe he thought a foul should have been called, but there was no Purdue player committed a foul. I think it was all orchestrated. He knew he was going to do this, and others have pointed this out. It's not my thought, but it seems like it was probably orchestrated. He wanted to show his team that he was going to stand up, or maybe want to send a message. He would. They Somebody tried to bait him in the presser about commenting on the officiating. He didn't go there. He had a cooler head by that point, but he was certainly hot to go run right out on the court to confront that official, who really, matter-of-factly and very quickly teed him up. Then Boo Booey got the technical too, and then I, at that point, I saw a police officer on the court.
Yeah, they brought the security on the court.
I don't know if I've ever
Security.
seen that.
I've
Bar Knight
never
was
seen
trying
that.
to
Never seen
restrain
that.
him. They were trying to save him from himself there. Sometimes, we all know. Sometimes we've been there ourselves. You kind of get a fit of rage where you really lose all common sense. And Chris Collins probably was in that fit of rage for a while. So, and then he kind of composed himself, like you said, Alan, and kind of bizarrely went over and acknowledged Matt Painter, and then shook Zach Edey's hand, and then kind of incited the crowd more as he went up the tunnel. So yeah, it was an exit unlike any I can ever recall seeing in Mackey Arena.
Common friend Jane Schott, wife of Tom Schott, is a women's girls basketball coach at West Lafayette. I happened to see her on Thursday morning, real early, and she said, "Yeah, there was a game where I got out of half court. And I didn't even know why I was there. I just all of a sudden lost my mind." And Jane
Yeah,
is
you
a
do.
great teacher, a very focused person, kind of like Chris Collins. It just happened. But I know the Lance Jones, I think he was upset about the hook, potential hook there. But yeah, I agree with you. I think he was sending a message to keep his team competitive because they've got a huge game for them when they go to Minnesota this weekend. They don't want to, they said, you don't want to let
I
Purdue beat you
don't
twice. Purdue, obviously, also that big game on Sunday at Wisconsin. All right, your day job, you're an excellent analyst of all sports, but college football and Purdue football is that you had an interesting experience Wednesday getting a chance to talk to a number of the newcomers for stuff that'll be on the Boilermaker Alliance, but also we'll have stuff on our site about that. But just tell me about your impressions of some of the guys, not only from a physical standpoint, but what you heard and saw in the interviews.
Yeah, I got a chance to speak to maybe 10 or 11 of the transfer portal guys, one of the junior college transfers. Like you said, Alan, on camera interviews for the Boilermaker Alliance. So if you're a subscriber to the Alliance, those videos will be posted here at some point. I think they're going to drip and drab them out. I did a 100-yard walk with Dylan Thienemann, and yeah, impressive young men just from my brief interactions. The Georgia guy, CJ Madden, certainly passes the eyeball test, an outside linebacker, and CJ Smith and the other wide receiver, Denylon Morissette. CJ Smith, I will say this, he even wears a necklace that says Zoom on it. He's the burner, obviously. And it's not self-anointed. He's one of the fastest kids in Florida coming out of high school. Spent a lot of his youth in Hawaii. But again, keep your eye on CJ Smith, the Georgia wide receiver. With that speed, boy, he can take the top off a defense, and that's the type of speed Purdue has not had at the position. I don't know, maybe ever, Alan. They never really have a lot of those true burners. But keep your eye on CJ Smith and the junior college transfer, the offensive tackle, Jaquan Bolden. biggest man on the roster, 6'5", you know, 300, 6'6", 350 pounds. And I talked to a couple of the other offensive linemen, Joshua Sales from IU and DJ Wingfield of New Mexico. Again, certainly, Alan, these guys are they passed the proverbial eyeball test, and they seem like good people. You know, the spring practice will be starting that last, I think it's about the week after spring break, in about mid-March or so. So, you know, Cam Brown, the wide receiver from UCLA, this will be his third school. He's actually the son of Larry Brown, who was the MVP of Super Bowl 30, a defensive back for the Dallas Cowboys. So I tried to glean some other tidbits on these guys as well. But yeah, it's just going to be exciting, Alan. You know, Reggie Love, the Illinois running back, I spoke with him. I think he's going to be a good complement to Devin Mockabee. And I know there's a lot of pieces here, Alan, but I'm really excited about the offensive line, number one. Much more depth now, quality depth, experience depth, really helped that unit out. And the receivers, too, right? We all know the attrition Purdue suffered there via the portal with Deion Burks and TJ Sheffield, Abdur-Rahman Yassin, Mershon Rice. They're all gone. Who is going to catch passes now? If you look at the veterans, there's not much. Jaden Dixon-Veal. So they really need the wide receivers, Al. And I'm eager to watch these receivers in addition to the offensive line in spring football. And real quick, too, next Wednesday, signing day, which used to be the big high holiday in
Yeah,
college football,
yes,
but
it
now it's
was.
sort of an afterthought. But don't expect much from Purdue then. But I'm bringing it up because there is one player they could sign that day. I think it's that junior college wide receiver, Leland Smith. Again, if they sign anybody outside of him, I'm not sure. But again, now they could add another piece to their wideout puzzle, maybe next week. So keep that on your radar.
All right, Purdue got its fifth commitment this week. Also, Rashad Jones, class of 2025. Guy was after some good schools were after him as well. Any sense or a sense, I should say. I know you'd have any sense of what that means, but also just kind of where that class is going. Obviously, they've got the quarterback in there with Sawyer Anderson as well. But what was your takeaway on that?
Yeah, he's an outside linebacker from Belleville, Michigan, the same high school as Deion Burks. A guy who right now has a little bit more potential than production. And it's just a nice start to this 2025 class for Purdue with the five commitments. They got, I think it was last spring, Keelan Abrams, another edge player from Texas. They have a running back from Akron, Zaire Stevens. You mentioned Rashad Jones, the most recent commit, another edge guy. Quarterback Sawyer Anderson, Allen. He's they list him at 5'10". You know, he's one of those shorter quarterbacks. But you know what? When we grew up, you know, short quarterbacks are almost taboo. You had Fran Tarkenton. How about a Fran Tarkenton reference for you today, Allen?
There you go. If he can scramble like
Anyways.
Fran, he's good.
Sawyer Anderson's guy, he's obviously uber talented, and we all know shorter quarterbacks can get things done. And then Allen, right now, they're the cream of the crop so far in this very small class. Terrion Grant, they got a couple weeks ago, four-star player, a truly elite cornerback from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. He probably is going to end up being the best recruit in this class. I know it has a long way to go, but again, he's a special player. The question is going to be, can the Boilermakers hold on to him, Alan? It's a long way till next December. Where
Oh
will
my
we be
God.
next? Where will we be next December, Alan Carbett? Gosh,
I don't know, but that's 10 months
let's hope. Let's hope
away.
we're above ground and
Yeah,
alive.
exactly.
Yeah, can they keep Terrion Grant until next December? We'll see. But he's a special player, and obviously, Alan, Junior Day this weekend, and they're getting more players in. And then, you know, really looking ahead, June. That's the big month for these recruits. A lot of kids commit in June. That Purdue has their camps over here, just across Northwestern Avenue. But now they got a nice start with five players, and it'll be fun to watch this group continue to develop.
Yeah, it will be an interesting storyline, and will be as we always say, head on a swivel for Coach Ryan Walters, for Tom Dienhart, and others that are watching this, because it will be an active session over the next 10 months, just to make see what you see today may not be what you will probably guaranteed will not be what you see in 20 or in December 2024. But sounds good from a Ryan Walters standpoint that they're off to a off to a good start from that standpoint. So that will be an
And
interesting game.
lastly, too, bit
Yes,
of news
sir.
last week. It's been on the site a couple of times, but now we're on a video. Just that they're bringing in a defensive analyst, Andy
Yes,
Boo,
I wanted to ask you about
B-U
that. Go ahead.
B-U-H, just pronounced Boo. Nice pickup. A veteran guy who's been a defensive coordinator at several schools. Was at Illinois, Alan, was the linebackers coach at Illinois. So obviously he's worked with Ryan Walters and Kevin Kane and Joe Dineen and Grant O'Brien and Corey Patterson, all those guys. So the ex-Illinois fraternity adds another to their ranks in West Lafayette. A kind of guy, like I said, a veteran to bring to your staff to work as a defensive analyst. Can't be anything but good. Like I said, when you get a set of eyeballs like that helping you out now too.
All right, Tom. All great stuff as always. Like I said, I just like sitting next to you. We can rehash all the old
We can
times as we
stretch
sit
out.
there in Mackey Arena and spread out and had a fun night.
Alan was sitting by Mason Gillis's mother. I never would have guessed that was Mason Gillis's mother.
And a lovely lady. She and I
Kind of a
have
nice
Tammy
lady,
is
yeah.
I we don't talk. I don't ask her any inside secrets. She's a good mom and
Yeah.
hard to contain yourself when she handles herself extremely well in
Yeah.
those situations and has enjoyed making the road trip watching her son over the last 4 years at Purdue. And boy, what a
Great
player Mason
player.
Gillis is as well,
So
man. No doubt.
underrated.
And she
He
raised him well. I mean, there's no doubt
Yeah.
that that part he's a tough
Yeah.
dude, but he does a
Tough dude.
lot of the dirty work for Purdue. Segment two, Rob Blackman, our special guest. You know, I think it's interesting. I don't know that you and I have ever done this show. I mean, you've done a lot of media in your life, and you know, this is a first for you. But we're glad to have you. And of course, the voice of Purdue men's basketball, and he'll be busy on Sunday. He's busy every day covering the Boilermakers, but and what a season Purdue's having. We'll talk about Wednesday's crazy game in Mackey Arena, Thursday night's crazy game in Lincoln, really, as it turned out to be. Nebraska coming from 19 points behind to beat Wisconsin, and what that all may mean on Sunday at 1 o'clock local or Eastern time, I guess the time is when the Boilermakers take. And Rob will be on the air at noon with his partner Bobby Riddell. One thing we wanted to do, to talk about initially is someone we both know, the passing of Jim Rowinski, and that was quite sad news on Thursday night. Hearing of those, of course, Rob and Elliot had done a Boiler Bowl podcast. I was a student manager when Jim Rowinski was at Purdue and knew Jim relatively well. Got to know him, got to kind of reacquainted with him as Rob did in the last year, but just. There's not a lot to say in this type of situation, but it's a sad day for a very proud Purdue basketball program.
Yeah, and you know, his story was so remarkable about even how he just found his way to Purdue. And I know it's something you've spoken about at length before, Alan, but yeah, it was really neat. Elliot and I had a chance to visit with him. It was less than a year ago, might have been closer to 6 or 8 months ago. He joined us on the Boiler Ball podcast. And I'm a little bit younger than you are, Alan, not much, but you know, when I was a kid following Purdue basketball, like he was the guy, right? He was like the Incredible Hulk. When you saw him out there and those big muscles and the way he looked in a uniform and just to see him play basketball, you're like, wow, how can a guy with muscles like this be as good as he is at basketball? Because of course back then, you know, weightlifting was kind of taboo in basketball. It's not anymore, but it was back then. So like just many so many great memories from a Purdue basketball standpoint with Jim Rowinski and yeah, man, sad news to hear of his passing.
Yeah, an unbelievable story. It really is a Zach Edey-esque story. Difference, there are
Yeah.
differences, but you think about Rowinski comes to Purdue at 6'4", 185 pounds as a walk-on, leaves 6'8", 255. Curry Kirkpatrick from Sports Illustrated wrote the great story about the Prince of Pecs. He was an
Yes.
unbelievable story, and he worked extremely hard to get to where he was. And
And
I think, like you said, a sad day.
as you know, Alan, he came to Purdue. You talk about being a walk-on. You know the story he shared with us. It not only was he a walk-on, he was just hoping to make the practice team as a tryout
That's right.
player.
He was a renegade. They called him
He was, yeah, played on the Renegade team. And that was all he asked for was, hey, could I have a tryout to maybe make the practice squad? And the rest, as they say, is history. And that's a hell of a story from going from practice squad tryout guy to becoming one of the all-time greats in the history of Purdue basketball.
Yeah, he came to Purdue with Lee Rose, was the team that last went to the Final Four. He was a renegade, kind of a practice player. We used to call him Dr. Leap because he could jump out of the gym, and that changed a little bit when he got a lot bigger, but unbelievable story. All right, the Boilermakers, let's go back to Wednesday night. Still, you were position A to watch Chris Collins meltdown while you were broadcasting, but more importantly, really, from a Purdue perspective, is the Boilermakers really dug themselves out of not as big a hole as Nebraska did on Thursday night, but still down 5 with 2.5 minutes to go, and Northwestern not capable of missing a shot, it seemed. What an unbelievable finish to that game.
Yeah, 78-73 was the score you're referencing there when Purdue was down 5. And man, you just sitting courtside just did not have a real good feeling about how that game was going to wind up. But of course, Lance Jones hits the big three. I mean, my gosh, what a find he has been for Purdue. And look, I'll be the first to say it, Alan. I didn't know much about him. Like anyone else, I looked up his resume and saw that he was, you know, 2 times All Missouri Valley Conference defensive team. And I knew that he was a 1,000-point scorer. But I certainly didn't think offensively that he was not, A, as skilled as we have found out as he is, and B, as fearless as he is. I mean, you think about some of the shots he has made in his very short time here at Purdue, including those threes late in the game when Purdue absolutely had to have him Wednesday night. I mean, my gosh, he did not shy away from the big moment, and we're glad to have him because of that. But yeah, man, what a find, what a punch in the arm he has been offensively for Purdue, and on the defensive end too. But just the fact that he was not bashful about letting those threes fly late in the game when Purdue was really teetering there. And I got to tell you, when it was 78-73, I was real nervous about how that thing was gonna wrap up. But thank goodness for Lance Jones.
Well, you know, and I think one of the interesting things, and you're closer to this team, travel with them, around them a lot, all the time, basically on the road. Last year, you know, Purdue had such a great year, overachieved in a lot of ways, got to the tournament, and it's been well documented what's happened the last 3 years in the tournament. But one of the things I think is interesting about Lance Jones is he has no memory of that. There's no predisposition. Yeah. Not that the guys that are playing on his team have, but he can steer you away from that. He's, like you said, no fear. And he played that three hit again right in front of your broadcast position and about in your lap, as I recall, yesterday or on Wednesday. It was just, again, he's there to make plays, and that really does make a difference in the team that is trying to get over the hump.
You know, where he's made the biggest difference in this, you know, this one of these things you can prove statistically, is how much better Purdue is in transition with him. Just because of his athleticism, his ability to get out and run and outrun the defense. He gets so many of those layups at the basket because he's able to get out and run without the ball on the wing, and Braden Smith normally finds him cutting to the bucket. I say statistically because Purdue already has more fast break points this year than they had the entire season last year. That's 35 games that Purdue played last year. And here we are now 22 games into this season, and Purdue already has more transition points. That's the Lance Jones effect. Then those are the easy points that Matt Painter talks so much about. Look, Purdue's really good offensively, spends most of the year in the top 5 in adjusted offensive efficiency. But when you're constantly having to try to score against a set defense in the half court, that is a laboring task. That is tough to do on a night-in, night-out basis, especially in the Big Ten. So what do you do to try to alleviate that? We try to get easy points in transition, and that's what Lance Jones has provided. So now Purdue doesn't have to try to score every single point in the game in half-court offense against a set defense. So that, to me, has been the biggest attribute that he has brought to this team on a positive side, is his ability to get Purdue points in transition. I think Braden Smith was more than capable of doing that last year. He just didn't really have a running mate that could help him get those kind of buckets in transition. Now that we've added the athleticism that we have with Lance, that is a lethal 1-2 combination in transition offense, and Purdue's been better for it.
All right, the landscape of the Big Ten changed Thursday night to some extent. At least it got evened out with the Nebraska's come from behind win. What was the first time? Of course, it's great now that you've got all these data now that where you can sort by certain things and get this. This was Wisconsin, what, 120 games. They had not blown a 15-point lead at the half. They did on Thursday night. But talk about the Big Ten as you see it. You've been in all the arenas. Not that Purdue has played everyone yet in the league, but you certainly watch a lot of basketball. Sunday afternoon will be huge, and it will be interesting to see. Wisconsin got taken into overtime and lost. Purdue pulled one out of the fire. You've watched a lot of basketball and sports in your life. What are you going to see from an added? What do you think the environment will be? It'll be raucous, I assume, in Wisconsin. But also, what do you think the psyche of the Badgers and Purdue will be going into that game?
Well, let's go with the old Gene Katie thought of, you know, not who you play them, but when you play them. Well, and so I'm not sure what to expect from from Wisconsin after losing to Nebraska. You're right. It's an overtime loss. It's a road game. It's a game in which you blew a 19-point lead. So they're going to be traveling back, or they did travel back, I should say, late on Thursday night. And that's a quick turnaround for them. Granted, they're the home team, but that's going to be a quick turnaround to play at what'll be noon local time for them on Sunday. So I'm anxious to see maybe, and I watched that game very closely Thursday night, trying to study up to get ready for our broadcast. And they're only playing, you know, they played nine. Greg played nine, but he really played closer to seven.
That's right.
A couple of those guys, Carter Gilmore didn't play a whole lot of CG, and I don't think played at all in the second half. If he did, I don't remember it. So, you know, they really played about seven. So they go into overtime on the road in a tough environment. So I'm not sure what to expect from them. They're always good in the Kohl Center. I know Purdue won there last year, but they're just always so good at home. Just something about that building. But I would also, you know, remind the fans, you know, even though Purdue won there last year, 2 years ago, it was the Chucky Hepburn bank shot at the buzzer in overtime that gave Wisconsin a Big Ten championship over Purdue. So I remember that game quite well, unfortunately. But yeah, I'm not sure what to expect, Alan. The old Gene Katy, and not who you play, but when you play them, they could probably go one of two ways just from an emotional standpoint with that loss at Nebraska. But I would also add this, you know, as a Purdue basketball guy, I can empathize with what happened at Nebraska Thursday night. That is a difficult building to play in. And when they start making threes like they did in the second half, especially CJ Wilcher, they become darn near impossible to beat. And what happened with Wisconsin is the same thing what happened with Purdue when Purdue lost in Lincoln, and that is too many turnovers. Wisconsin had a season high in turnovers in that game Thursday night, similar to what Purdue did. Purdue turned the ball over way too much in that game and let Nebraska make way too many 3-point shots. So we can empathize with the Badgers because we've been there, done that, unfortunately, this season.
Rink Mass is really good, too. I mean, he made some big plays down the stretch. And you know, like you said, C.J. Wilcher was terrific. Chucky Hepburn, yes, Purdue fans can't wash that out of their brains after 2 years ago. But he is a talent. Did not have as great a game maybe on Thursday night, but it wasn't that he wasn't productive, and he was well into double figures. But it will be an interesting matchup. Nobody matches up with Zach Edey, and it doesn't feel you don't feel like Wisconsin has that. I mean, by definition, that happens. But do you think that that's a place that they'll really try to exploit Purdue? I mean, they always do anyway. But what do you think Matt Painter will try to throw at them as much as anything?
Yeah, you know, Stephen Crowell is a 7-footer, but, you know, he's not 7'4", 300 pounds with the skill level that Zach is. And I would say this, too. I know this isn't segment. It's supposed to be about Nebraska, but Rink Mast is the toughest matchup in the Big Ten for Zach just because he can step out and shoot the three. And he's nimble enough to put the ball on the floor and dribble past Zach if needed. So without question, Rink is a really difficult matchup for Zach. Stephen Crowell, however, is much more of a traditional five. Now, Crowell can step out and shoot the three. He doesn't do it often, but he certainly can when needed. But he's not a high-volume three-point shooter. He's not going to be taking five or six or seven threes in that game on Sunday. It's just not what he does. So it is a much more traditional matchup. For Purdue from a center standpoint. But really, Alan, I mean, that game on Sunday is coming down to guard play. You watched AJ Store tonight, eight, or I keep saying tonight, sorry, Thursday night. AJ Store, 18 points in the first half against Nebraska. That guy could not miss. Now, he wasn't quite as good in the second half, certainly. But, if he has that type of a game against Purdue on Sunday afternoon, that's going to be very difficult for Purdue because he has really provided them a real punch in the arm from an offensive standpoint after transferring in from St. John's. And quite frankly, I think Blackwell's a lot better than we saw him play Thursday night at Lincoln. He did not play well in that game. He's been really good for him off the bench this year. Didn't have a great game Thursday night, but he will be playing at home, so he'll be a little bit more comfortable with the surroundings, obviously, as most young players normally are. So I know most of the attention goes to Zach Edey v. Steven Crowell, and I get it, two very good 7-footers in our league going head to head. But really, I think it comes down to guard play on Sunday and who's getting the more production from the guard play. Is AJ Store, is Chucky Hepburn, is Max Klezmann, who hit some huge threes Thursday night in the second half for Wisconsin. Does he get it going? We saw Klezmann just last week against Indiana score 20 straight points all by himself. You think about that. We haven't seen Zach Edey do that. I mean, that's hard to do. 20 straight points all by yourself. And Klezmann did that against Indiana. So this game really, I think, comes down to guard play Sunday. Purdue's guards are really good. We know that. Lance has been good. Fletcher's been good. Obviously, Braden's been good. But you know what? Wisconsin's guard play's been really good too. So that to me, that's where this game's going to come down to on Sunday.
Really interesting thing about the runs. There were three of them in the Nebraska game. Wisconsin had three guys that had over 10-point runs, I think, in that game as well. And very strange. That's a strange, another strange statistic, but a strange thing. And I'd never heard, I don't think I've ever heard of 20 points. I'm sure it's happened. But even the great scorers like Rick Mount and others over the years, that's an incredible feat. And the Badgers seem to be, at least in the Nebraska game Thursday, were streaky in that level, but got had that 19-point lead and couldn't hold it. And now Purdue in the loss column, and maybe all the way is now tied with the Badgers for first place. All
And
right, one
so
other question I
interesting.
have.
Oh
Yeah,
yeah,
go
and I
ahead.
hate to cut you off there, Alan, but and I think most of our fans know this, but in case you might have forgotten, remember senior day for Purdue is home against Wisconsin. So no matter what happens on Sunday, there is going to be a rematch, and it's going to be the final home game of the season and the final game ever at Mackey Arena for Zach Edey and for Mason Gillis and for Ethan Morton. So that no matter what happens Sunday, there's probably still a really good chance that senior day game at Mackey Arena is probably still going to have a major implication deciding who wins the Big Ten regular season title.
You know who the winner of that is? StubHub and SeatGeek for the value of those tickets in Mackey Arena and that service charge. Unbelievable from that standpoint. All right, I want to ask you one question just about your job and how you do it on the road. It's always interesting because you do travel. Just take us through a 1 o'clock Eastern start or noon. The Boilermakers will be up for pregame at 8, I would assume, or eight Central. But tell us about what your game day, because you talked to Matt Painter, you're certainly around all that, and you get to the arena well and early. But take us through it. What will be your day on Sunday as you get ready for the Badgers?
Okay, yeah, good question because I think it'd be nice for maybe some of the fans to have a little peek behind the curtain. Now, this weekend will be just a slight different in kind of how we go about our preparation, only because we cannot get into the Kohl Center and shoot around on Saturday afternoon. They have an event going that evening slash afternoon, so Purdue doesn't get a chance to get in there and shoot on Saturday. Typically, for a noon tip, which is going to be noon local on a Sunday, we would go over to the arena sometime Saturday, late afternoon, early evening, at least shoot for an hour or so. We won't have that luxury this time around. That rarely happens, but it is happening here. So with that in mind, this is how it's going to look like on Sunday. And I know this because I just got the itinerary sent to me a few hours ago. So we'll have at 8 a.m., we'll get the guys all gathered up in a banquet room there at the hotel, and they'll watch about 15 minutes of film. And it'll just be refresher stuff. Purdue's had the last couple of days to get ready for this game, so they've already seen plenty of film on Wisconsin. But it'll just be a matter of PJ Thompson will take us through, I don't know, 10 or 12 defensive looks that he thinks we're going to get against Wisconsin. on film that he's seen against the stuff that we run offensively. And then either Terry Johnson or Paul Lusk will talk, will do the same thing on defense. They'll talk through 10 or 12 things about, hey, this is how we want to defend. Again, this is all refresher stuff. The guys have been over it for the last 48 hours or so. So it's just a real quick hit to, for a quick refresher. That lasts about 15 minutes. And then our guys will have breakfast right there in that same room. They'll bring breakfast out, and that'll kind of be it. They'll go back to their rooms and get all dressed and ready to go. And with a noon game, we'll bus out at like about 9:45 or so to get to the arena. We will get to the arena a little bit earlier to shoot around about 15 minutes earlier than we normally would. But again, that's because we didn't get a chance to shoot Saturday night. So you just want the guys to get an extra 15 minutes of, you know, shooting around in that building to try to get a feel for Kohl Center and that kind of stuff. Most of our guys have already played a game there, obviously, last year, so it's not that big of a deal. I don't know if Lance Jones has ever played there or not. I'm assuming he hasn't, but so it's really not that big of a deal for our guys. But you ask about me personally. So when the film is done and the players start to eat breakfast, Coach Painter and I will step out of the room and we'll pre-record our pregame show, which is about a 5-minute segment. And then when we're done, I'll give the microphone to Bobby Riddell, my broadcast partner, and he will do his 5-minute segment with one of our assistant coaches for what's called the scouting report segment. So we knock that stuff out early, and then we all have our breakfast too. And then that's kind of it, man. Get on the bus and roll over to the Kohl Center and try to find a way to beat the Badgers.
Yeah, and you take the air an hour before tip, so you'll be on 11 o'clock Central, noon Eastern, and you also get to travel with the great West Scott. So that's that part.
We do, and I should also mention this, and I know you know this, Alan. But Stephanie and I, our oldest son, Evan, he's a freshman at the University of Wisconsin. So this game's got a little extra meaning in the Blackman household. This game's got a little extra riding on it because old dad doesn't want to have to hear it from his oldest son if things go sideways for our Boilermakers on Sunday. So we'll be a house divided for about 2 hours on Sunday afternoon.
Will you get a chance to visit with him then when you're up there?
Yeah, he'll be. We're actually gonna. Our team will arrive in Madison actually early Saturday, early afternoon. So we're gonna spend some time with him, and Stephanie's going on the trip. So, but he's a college kid. I know you've had a couple in your house, Alan. He didn't want to spend a whole lot of time with mom and dad Saturday, but we'll try to nail him down for a couple hours anyway to hang out with us.
I do know one thing: if you pay for something, I always say vacations, but you take him out to eat, he'll be there. So, and that's a great sidelight. And thanks for sharing your a little bit of that because it really is interesting, not only on a family level, but also what will be happening that. So, Rob, thanks so much for your time, and we appreciate it. We always appreciate your work, and you have done a masterful job of. And a very difficult job, and that is replacing a legend in Larry Clisby. There is no replacing Larry Clisby, and I think you've been paid so much respect to his legacy, and that has been a very, very important thing as well. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a couple minutes when Bruce Weber will join us, and we'll talk some more Purdue basketball as well, certainly with the big game coming on Sunday. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a couple minutes on Golden Black Law. Welcome to segment three, joined by Bruce Weber. Bruce needs an introduction to our audience, obviously, a long time. 18 years at Purdue as an assistant coach. Won 400. Every time I see that, 497 games, you're not old enough to have won 497 games. That's impressive. That at Kansas State, at Illinois, took Illinois to the Final Four in 2005. And, of course, Southern Illinois, where he worked with a guy named Matt Painter. And, of course, he knows that. But first, I wanted to first kind of on a sad note, not kind of on a sad note, on a real sad note, with Jim Rowinski's passing on Thursday. Suzanne, just an unbelievable story from a basketball perspective. You obviously coached him to his greatest heights as an assistant. Just talk about kind of not a whole lot to say in this situation, but it's still a very, very numbing situation and sad to hear about Jim's passing.
Yeah, just very, very tragic. And, you know, for him to pass, obviously, and just an amazing story. Probably one of there's so many great stories in college basketball, but his is so unique, as you know, and you know, to be a walk-on, to get hurt like he did, and all of a sudden to grow whatever it was, 6-7 inches, and get strong like that, and end up leading us to a Big Ten championship and becoming the MVP of the Big Ten. You know, when I tell people stories like that, they're like, oh, you're making this up. It's like a book. And, you know, so it's amazing what he did. He ended up playing, you know, professional basketball for quite a while. And he loved basketball. He loved playing. He loved working out. And he was just a good person. Obviously, really good friends with that group. Kurt Clausen, Greg Eifert, all, you know, they communicated with me last night, and you know, they had a lot of fun together. There's no doubt.
And when they made it quite in the 82 trip to New York for the NIT championship, he took me off track betting. So he got me into that. He loved being a New York guy and being from Long Island. That was a big deal for him. And he was the quintessential guy, and that really went from a complete, like you said, a renegade on Lee Rose's staff to starting 2 years later. We remember his first start was against Hakeem Olajuwon. Just an unreal, unreal story.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And the uniqueness, too, of, you know, Russell Cross going pro and then Jim getting that opportunity. Because if Russell doesn't go pro, Jim's not probably playing quite. He's definitely not starting and not playing much. And also the story we visited last year, one of the greatest comeback games in the history, and him banking in the shot at the top of the key. I'll always remember that one.
Yeah, it's hard to forget. All right, Purdue dodged a huge bullet on Wednesday against Northwestern in a really incredible game. You and Ray and Dave Revson had some great not only commentary, but analysis of that. But talk about that. You know, Northwestern is really good. It's hard for sometimes Purdue fans to fully realize. They should now, because obviously the Wildcats beat Purdue up in Evanston. But Northwestern is really good. But Purdue, it showed a lot about Purdue to get out of that game alive, not shooting the ball from the free throw line very well, and yet finding a way to win. Does that say a lot about where Purdue is, or is that just something that Purdue fans need to be concerned about moving forward?
Well, you know, I really think it says a lot about Purdue. You know, we always talk about good teams find a way to win. And it wasn't like Purdue played bad other than the free throws. Yeah, I mean, they shot 57 from the field, I believe, and 46 from three. I'm pretty sure that they, you know, they shot the ball well. Northwestern is good. And I think a lot of times it's just matchups. People don't realize how important matchups are, you know, how, you know, Northwestern plays and runs their stuff. And, you know, and they shot unbelievable. And, you know, it's just amazing. Both games were similar. Allied 8 points at halftime. Northwestern's comebacks in the second half, tie score at the end, overtime, and both teams win kind of about the same amount on you know, home court. So Northwestern's good, and if you really study it, Northwestern played at Wisconsin. They played them the best. Anyone has played in Madison. They also have played the best, other than Wisconsin last night, overtime. They had played at Nebraska the best game, and now they played Purdue the best. So they're a good team, and you know, you look at them, maybe they're not sexy and they don't have some star players. Well, Boo Boo, he's a star, but I mean, they don't have, I guess beyond Boo, they don't have these name players, but Chris Collins has done a really nice job, and it's a good win for Purdue. And
the next time
with Boo Boo having the ball at the end,
Houston Intercontinental Flight 4128. He's
made a lot of big shots.
7 minutes behind schedule,
and he didn't get that one to go.
Departure is 10:17.
I love what Brandon says, how he played. It's just amazing, his maturity as a player.
175 passengers.
It is a travesty that
he's not on
that
box. Any personal assistance devices, for example, your
wheelchair,
or your
wheelchair.
I'm not sure
you're going to win the top point guard.
Yeah, B19. To be gate checked before
the
white press.
He absolutely. I mean, it is amazing. He's one of the best point guards Purdue has had in a long time. Maybe at the end of the day, be the best they've ever had, just in terms of how the job he's done. I think the other thing that was interesting about that game is just the fact that Purdue, Zach Edey had 15 points midway through the second half, and basically scores 15 points in the last 5 or 6 minutes of the, well, maybe the best 3 or 4 minutes of regulation in the last 5 minutes. But just Purdue deciding to go to Edey and getting it done that way is certainly a formula for success.
Yeah, they had, and again, I give Braden credit. There were several opportunities where he could have shot it. He had an open shot, but he was a little more patient. He got the post feed. He kept his dribble a couple times and got it to Zach. He was smart enough. Obviously, he's listening to Coach Painter. I think that's part of it. Yeah. That, you know, when you're coachable and you want to win, he made all the right plays to get it to Zach. And then they just, Northwestern is as physical as anybody. If Zach makes his free throws, he has even a bigger game. And that's the thing that's been so impressive for me with Zach, is that he is a good free throw shooter in over 70. Usually for big guys, that's a difficult task a lot of times. Yeah. To make free throws,
those passengers that are coming to Cincinnati,
made the right decision and got the ball to him at the right time.
Cincinnati will be the next man up departing out of gate number V17.
Yeah, no question, and he has been worthy of national player of the year, though I know you guys have some debate even with Ray Davis on the set about Bowie's ability to be first team All-American, maybe national. You know, for the while during that game, you said, "My gosh, he is as good as anybody in the country." But do you think Bowie ends up being he'll be an All Big Ten guy? Do you think he makes a first team All American? Do you think he makes top two teams All American? How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think he deserves to be up there in that top couple. I haven't studied national every team you have, and know a lot more. But Zach's going to be there. There's no doubt. He deserves to be up there. And if he, if he makes that shot at the end of the game and beats Purdue at Purdue, it would have helped. But he's not even on the Wooden list, which was really disappointing also. And one thing I talked about the guys in the studio and our all the, producers and all that at the BTN is like, is it disturbing that, for the Big Ten nationally, that Braden didn't get on the Cousy list and Boo didn't get on the Wooden list? Are we not getting the publicity we need? Because I'm not sure the depth is as good as it was a year ago, but I think the top teams are definitely as good and probably better. No doubt with Purdue, no doubt with Wisconsin. I think Northwestern, I doubt it if they were better than last year, but they're definitely capable. They're way better offensively. I guess Michigan State would be the one. Can they ever get on a little bit of a run? Nebraska's better than a year ago. Maryland, I think Maryland's the one that, is kind of the surprising team that, they may make the run. And then obviously Illinois is better than they were a year ago also.
Yeah, interesting thing. It'll be interesting to see how many teams make the tournament, but how it all plays out in the Big Ten tournament. You'll have a lot to talk about from that standpoint. Okay, Wisconsin, crazy 19. That was the statistic that I don't know who they got pulled out, that they were 120-0 when they were up 15 at the half. Well, they were up 15 at the half and lost at Nebraska. What you see there, and you prepared teams with those type of psyche situation where Purdue is mentally after its win, where Wisconsin may be after an overtime loss and a one day less to prepare. What does all that mean on Sunday when these two teams meet?
I don't think it means a whole lot, to be honest. I there's sometimes we always say don't let one loss make two losses. And I just think they're too mature playing at home, playing Purdue. I don't think it'll make a difference with Wisconsin. Obviously Purdue has some nice momentum. And they had to win it the way they did in overtime. I think that you keep your edge there. Wisconsin is really, really good. I actually had the first Nebraska at Wisconsin game and they scored 88. They score at home. They're very efficient. I do see them giving Purdue a little bit of a problem, especially if their big guys make three. If they're, you know, the matchups, you know, I haven't talked to Matt. I texted him yesterday, actually, but not about matchups or anything. But you would think he might put Zach on Wall because Wall probably scores more inside. You know, and then you got a Chance Gillis or Trey Kaufman Wren or whoever can guard Crowell out on the court, although they'll put Crowell inside at times too, but I think he's more effective when he makes threes for them. I think the big matchup is who's going to stop AJ Crowell. And I mean, he's a special player. And, you know, but again, Klesmith and even Chucky Hepburn, Blackwell comes off the bench. Every game it seems to be somebody else. But for them to lose last night, the way they lost, it was very, very uncharacteristic of them. They're so efficient. They've been so, you know, so good about taking care of the ball and making the right plays. And as you know, and watching Purdue go to Nebraska, you know, couple years in a row here, that place, they get going, they get cooking. Fred lets them play, and they can make some shots. And and even down the stretch, it looked like Wisconsin had the game.
Yeah.
Mass makes an unbelievable step back three to tie that thing. And Nebraska could have won in regulation. They had the ball. Did it. So, but I expect it's a big time game. Obviously, you got them again one more time. And you got Illinois at Illinois. So, and I'm not looking by other people, but, both teams, if you look at it, have about the same schedule. Wisconsin has two. They have Illinois at home and Purdue at home. And obviously, Purdue has two road games at Madison and also at Illinois here down the stretch in this last nine.
Yeah, I think that's the number one thing that us mere mortals that observe basketball do not understand. And I still don't, when you talk matchups, and you're right, it's always all coaches, good coaches like yourself, talk about matchups. It's hard for all of us to fully understand, like, why certain games are not better than they are. But certain matchups end up being a certain thing, but that is a difference. Hey, Bruce, thanks so much for your time today. We kind of made our way through the airport here, and I appreciate your patience and sorry for a little bit of that background noise, but always great to talk to you and always great to get your expertise.
Want to thank our guests, Tom Dienhart, not a guest, he's my colleague at goldenblack.com, but always interesting conversations with Tom, but also Rob Blackman, voice of Purdue basketball, and Bruce Weber for making this Saturday simulcast a good one. We appreciate them. Want to thank the Union Club Hotel and for all they do for us. Make sure next time you plan an excursion to West Lafayette that you try out the Union Club Hotel. Even if you come go for the restaurant, cup of coffee, the Boiler Up Bar is fantastic. We enjoy that very much. So we will be back next week. It's IU week, so it'll be a very special week. In fact, hope to have Gene Cady join us for the simulcast for next week's big game against Indiana in Mackey Arena. And, of course, some other special guests as well. We'll look forward to that show, too. So have a great week, everybody. Thanks for watching and listening. A reminder to like us or subscribe to us on our YouTube channel. Also, while you're at it, think about subscribing to goldenblack.com. We're very proud of the work we do. Tom Dienhart and Brian Newbert have been the best for me to work with. Mike Carmen, Jordan Jones, all the folks at Golden Black that make it happen. Consider a subscription or give it as a gift to somebody else. If you're a Purdue fan, you will not be disappointed. Also, Knucklehead Central, our message board, it's the gift that keeps on giving, but a lot of great information and discussion about Purdue sports on there as well. So again, thanks for watching or listening. Have a great week, everybody.